Please be joined now, Dr. Caleb Penninger, Dr. Mike Crovetti, CrovettiOrtho.com. Follow on Twitter, at Crovetti, C-R-O-V-E-T-T-I, Ortho. Gentlemen, welcome. Thanks for, good to see you again.
Great to be here. Thank you very much.
Caleb, who's got surgery today? Looks like Mike's about to go in, not you.
you've
got the suit on today. I think Mike's
me,
ready
right?
to go in and take care of a knee or something like that. We've got some questions for you guys because, as usual, there's a lot of stuff going on in the sports world and the injuries. We're going to give you one that you probably can't answer because I don't think anyone in the world can answer, but we'd like to ask you about Tom Brady's hand. Not knowing anything about this or what it could be, if you're a better out there, because they're very interested, what would you as a doctor not want to hear, beside a break, obviously, but what would you not want to hear in terms of what he has to do on a snap-to-snap basis on Sunday?
I think if he's bracing his thumb, if he really did have an injury that was higher toward the hand and the thumb, kind of at that, at the base of the thumb where you can really tear a ligament or injure that joint, I think that's his worst-case scenario. If this is a little further toward the fingertip or if it's one of his other fingers, I think we'll find this to be a lot more talk than real problem.
Okay.
But if it's lower on the thumb toward the base of the hand, that could be a lot worse situation.
Okay.
And it's significant. I mean, if it's lower on the thumb, it is a problem.
Because he's trying to grip.
Yeah, he's trying to grip. And, you know, if you look at even people who have injuries to their thumb or, God forbid, ever lost a thumb,
right.
That's a 40% disability. Of your inability to use that hand. It's a 40% disability. So, I mean, it's significant in terms of the grip and where the grip comes from, obviously from the small finger and the thumb. So when that ligament's injured on there, that grip becomes a real issue. Now, the fact that he's out there, he's got both gloves on, you know, you saw him maybe catch a ball or held a ball the other day, you'd see it very differently if he tore that ligament and if they were thinking, that's a done deal.
Okay.
He's not playing, and he's probably not on the practice field if, in fact, he tore that ligament.
Torn ligament, he would not be on a field, yes?
I think he
could.
If he had torn that ulnar collateral ligament, he'd have such a hard time gripping and throwing the ball, and he'd be so prone to more injury. I don't think he'd be playing.
And they'd have him splinted up significantly. I mean, he wouldn't be out there with a red glove hanging on the field.
Catching and doing stuff. He wouldn't.
Not if he tore that ligament. He'd be in a splint cast, some type of immobilization to get that thing to start healing.
That's the voice of Dr. Mike Crovetti at CrovettiOrtho.com, as well as Dr. Caleb Penninger, Southern Nevada's leading sports injury expert. And as we talk about like certain hand injuries for quarterbacks, we don't really know the nature of the injury, like how it happened. They talk like a collision with a teammate. And in over the years, you see a lot of injuries happen in that regard where a quarterback's arm is going through a follow-through and it hits the helmet of a lineman.
Right.
And therefore, the metacarpals, the fingers begin swelling. There could be some damage, bruising up top. How does that happen? When you have to wear the glove to throw a ball, is there pressure that if it's not the ligament in the thumb, is there more problems up on top where the fingers are, the metacarpal?
If you've basically, when they do that, they get basically a load that travels up the course of the finger and can either jam the joint. You hear about a stoved finger or potentially even a dislocation of a finger joint. And yeah, that can be painful. The glove helps provide some compression. It provides some stability. Underneath the glove, you're not seeing what they're doing to tape that. It's going to have a lot more protection than just a gloved hand. There's going to be tape. There's going to be support. They're trying to stabilize. Where did it bend? What did it overdo? What ligament did it strain or stretch? There's rarely tendon involvement, but this is more just the capsule and the ligaments of the joint that gets injured the worst.
So why the glove then? What would a glove do in this nature? Or is this just
Brady and Belichick being Brady and Belichick?
Yeah, right.
I think I got to go with Dr. P on that one. I think, you know, that there's something under that glove, right?
Right. There's something going on.
There's something cooking under that glove, and I don't think anybody's going to know till 2 minutes before game time on Sunday. So we'll see.
A guy many thought would challenge for this year's NBA MVP, obviously won't now, is Kawhi Leonard, the young star from San Antonio. He continues to have this right quad tendinopathy. Is this what you're going to have to tell me?
Tendinopathy,
okay,
yeah.
So he has this injury. He comes back, kind of tweaks his shoulder, but now out indefinitely. Pop says, again, it's back to the quad. Someone in Kawhi Leonard appears to be one of the more finely tuned NBA athletes in the world, period. This quad, though, he cannot get over. I think when people out there hear a quad, they're like, how is this guy not over a quad yet? My God, I mean, it's just a quad. But tell us why now. How can this continue to be an issue with someone of his physical gifts?
Again, this is a problem with if there's strain or partial thickness tearing or injury in that quad tendon, and every time he's jumping and coming down from a shot or from a rebound, he's putting so much load on that tendon, and they've tried to string him along. They saw what happened with his teammate already, who actually tore his quad tendon, and I think that it sounds like they've exhausted their try at treating this conservatively, and they said, you know, you need more time off. You have to rest it. If you're going to get it to heal, we got to quit playing the game with it. And at some point, you try your best to keep him on the court, but the damage he's doing, even with the minimal time he's playing, is apparently too much for the rehab that he's getting. So they've got to shut him down.
Is the quad, if you tear it, is it a surgical procedure? Would he face surgery if it's not torn, or do they just say, like you said, you know, you're just resting, you will not until this, does it heal over time without surgery if it's not torn?
If it's not fully torn, then they wouldn't operate on it.
Okay.
If there's a large, near full thickness tear, then they'd, but he wouldn't have been playing on that
in the first place. So yeah. Is it literally rest and rehab?
It is. In fact, when you look at this tendon on an MRI, the tendon itself and the way it looks on the MRI doesn't really change. So you get the initial test that shows that it's abnormal. Even if you follow that test out over time, it can still look abnormal. And that's what tendinopathy is.
Okay.
When that tendon remains abnormal on an imaging study. However, it's a little bit of a business decision, a little bit of a play decision, right? So because the guy who's making the call on this is the player.
He's telling you how much pain he's in.
That's our guide for treatment.
Okay.
Our treatment guide is how much pain and discomfort he has, how long we rest him. Then we put him back in play again. Then his pain begins again. And it's completely subjective. I mean, he's got to tell us whether he can play or not.
Would either of you be surprised if, like, next week they say, you know what, we're shutting him down for the year? Could it be that bad?
As I was reading about it, it sounded like they are shutting him down for who knows how long.
So,
and I think that's they're to the point where they're probably telling him, hey, look, you either push through this or we shut you down.
Right.
And like Dr. Crivetti's saying, he's probably making the decision. He's fighting this. He's battling this. Let's give it some good recovery time and come back strong.
Does the quad, because I'm wondering why they took so long, and like you were mentioning, lots of rest, lots of relaxation, probably the only way, is because the quad tendon, does that cover a lot of different muscles? Does it have to go across a lot of different muscles in your leg that, if without treatment, it could cause other injuries in your leg, like it puts your knee at risk or ankle at risk or hip?
If you have a quad tendon that's not doing its job, and if it doesn't support your weight when you come down from a rebound, then you're falling, and on your way down, you could injure a ligament inside the knee, you could injure your meniscus, or you could hurt your ankle, or land on it with enough force to break something. So, yeah, okay. That is part of the concern.
Okay.
It's got to be strong in order to support him coming down with the type of force that he does as a big basketball player.
I always feel like such a novice when Dr. Caleb Pinniger's here and Dr. Mike Crivetti's here, because I always have these questions. I want to know more about the injuries. But because
they're doctors and we're doing a sports radio show.
We're always left with so many questions.
Then there's that.
We're working a toy department, and you guys are actually helping save lives. Yeah, Crivetti Orthopedics, go online, CrivettiOrtho.com. Staying in the NBA, we had a story about Markelle Fultz, this very highly touted college player who's with the Sixers now, but he had an unusual injury in his right shoulder before the season started, and it was starting to affect his shot in ways that they had not prepared for. What exactly was his injury again? Let's go over that, because it's hard to even pronounce.
They're calling this scapular dyskinesia or scapular dyskinesis, and what that dyskinesis means, abnormal function. So the shoulder blade itself has a series of muscles toward the spine, toward the shoulder, that attach it to the rib cage. All of these muscles act to help the shoulder blade move in a suspected pattern, suspected rhythm, so that the rest of the shoulder functions normally. And if you get an imbalance of these muscles, then now the shoulder tips toward a position of potential pain, or it isn't gliding as smooth as it needs to, and that's a struggle to rehab, because now you have to re-educate these muscles on balance. And so I know it's got to be frustrating for this young player, because he's seen multiple physicians, he's had multiple tests, tried different conservative treatments, and he's battling trying to repair the imbalance in his shoulder.
Yeah, his whole rookie year gone. It's too bad. He was, you know, we saw him here for like 5 seconds, a cup of tea there at the Summer League. I think he got hurt right away.
He was gone right away,
that guy.
Day three or something like that.
And that was the big decision on who to pick one last year, and they went with him. I definitely want to ask you guys about this. I'm sure you've seen the tape of it. It's the Joe Theismann one. You don't want to see, but everyone looks. It's, you know, the rubbernecks on the freeway at the accident. Gordon Hayward, when he went down to start the season against the Cavs, broke the tibia, fractured the tibia. I think he dislocated the ankle. I mean, it was one of those where, like, it was horrible. But now, Gordon Hayward, I think you read these stories. I don't know if he's out of a brace. He's walking. He's showing pictures of him and his family. And when you first happen, they're like, look, he's done for the year. Now you're hearing things. Could he eventually play here with the Celtics in the end as they try to win the NBA championship? Take us through him, because I think, you know, the amateur eyes looked at that and said, boy, that he has to be out for the season. But it appears, and maybe because he's this kind of well-conditioned athlete, he's bouncing back quicker than the rest of us would from this injury, from this catastrophic injury. Could he really come back, you think, within this year?
The original speculation on him was that this, if it was a true fracture dislocation, if most of the ligaments remained intact, if he tears a lot of ligaments and if those are torn to a degree where they need reconstruction, then it can be pretty long. But originally, they suspected that if he got the fracture fixed and if there was no significant ligament damage, he might be 10, 12 weeks.
Wow.
And that they originally said, oh, he's out for the season, you're right.
Yeah.
But really, 10, 12 weeks, we're coming up on
what?
It. The bone heals with pretty good predictability, usually 8 to 10, 8 to 12 weeks, the bone's really coming along.
Now You'd be surprised. Bone injuries,
really?
They're so rich in blood. Bones are loaded with blood. They're so healthy and nutrients, and they heal terrific. And it's important, number one, he had a good procedure, right? It was done correctly. Secondly, he's young and healthy.
Right.
He's a stud, right? So he's going to heal that, like Dr. Pinniger said, 8, 10, 12 weeks. That bone's going to be healed.
Healed to where he can go be an NBA player.
Well, that's, and again, soft tissue injury. Now, he's been immobilized. Now, that's why you see him walking around now.
Right.
So the idea now, when you break a tibia and you have it fixed, let's start loading it. Let's get him moving. Let's stimulate that bone to do more bone growth.
What is supposed to do?
That's a little bit different than, you know, jumping.
Right. Jumping, how he plays.
It's a little different than some speed of such a fine-tuned athlete.
Right.
And getting back to that level, he might be better off, you know, putting it to work in the offseason.
Dr. Caleb Pinniger, Mike Crivetti, CrivettiOrtho.com. Dr. Pinniger, you remember the first time you were here. You were talking about your fellowship at the James Andrews, Dr. James Andrews Institute in Florida, and you were talking about how you had seen some NBA players over the years, and you'd seen, like, their knees are very old knees when you scope them. What are NBA ankles like? Because we have Steph Curry with the Warriors, who last week fell to the floor during practice after an ankle injury, rolled his ankle, and they have been very, very precarious about bringing him back very, very slow, because they don't need to, obviously. But is there something stronger about NBA ankles that we don't really know about?
It's the most highly injured part of their body. This is what they're coming down on. This is what they step on another opposing player's foot. They roll their ankle. They sprain their ankle. So this is often what NBA players battle. And in doing a little looking into what he had done, Steph Curry, he's already had some of his ankle ligaments tightened. He had a procedure where they tighten up some ligaments, which helped to prevent recurrent ankle sprains.
Whoa, really?
He had even had a procedure where they went into the ankle and cleaned out some debris. So with the problem with recurrent injuries, when you roll your ankles severely enough, I don't know if you saw the video when he hurt this thing in December, that ankle made a pretty solid turn. Didn't dislocate it, but it had to be close. And that hurts the cartilage in ways that you don't see on an x-ray. So you do a scope and you see there's debris, there's wear, there's tear, and that there the like we talked about before in a knee, these guys, this 21-year-old, 24-year-old athletes, you come in and they've got horrible arthritis because of the impact. And the ankle's going to be not as severe, but they're going to have debris and wear in the ankle as well.
Yeah, I would think basketball players, Dr. Mike Crivetti, that, okay, so especially as many games as this guy's played in his life from AAU on the way up, that the ankle in basketball, he's always said that about Kobe Bryant. His, as many times as he broke down those ligaments just by rolling it, that he'll be 50 and he'll be walking maybe like 65, 70. What happens to basketball players over time when they're done playing because they have torn these ligaments in a way so often by rolling it, stepping on a foot over and over and over and over. When they're, you know, middle-aged, it looks like they walk like old men sometimes.
And I'll tell you, there's no joint in the body that tolerates instability. You know, if you have a guy who tore his ACL, right. He was 22 years old, didn't have it fixed, 45, we're giving him a new knee, right? Because his knee's been a sloppy gear for 20-some years. Well, the ankle is even more less give on instability. We have studies that show a millimeter of displacement, a millimeter off, leads to premature wear of the joint. So if you can imagine this, that these guys are off 2-3 millimeters consistently, play after play,
right.
Year after year, their incidence of degeneration is significantly higher due to that instability because it's a sloppy gear. So that's what happens to these guys.
And you're not replacing ankles, are you?
I mean, I'm not replacing ankles. Not my stud partner here might be replacing ankles someday. But we'll send those to the guys who might be a little better than that.
A lot of times they just, it's tougher. It's like you read stories about Troy Aikman and other people, NFL players, who say, you know, it's just hard to get out of bed some days. I mean, they took so much pounding over their careers. They're walking, you know, like old men. And they just, some days, I've read Aikman say over and over, you know, things hurt now that, you know, have never hurt. You know, and it's hard to get out of bed.
We were driving over talking about Tom Brady. Is this guy a machine? Is he RoboCop or what? I mean, what's he got left? And, you know, the number, even last weekend, still taking hits.
Yeah.
You know, and then, of course, they're after the play, but he's still taking hits. When does it pay?
You guys see a lot of people, I would imagine, 40 and above with the knees and all that. When you watch him, and we said this, you know, we kind of make fun of it. Is he a robot? What is he doing? Is it the all-green diet? I don't know what it is with this guy. But there are weeks this season when he was 40, and if you remember when he was 25, you're like, that's the same guy. I mean, it's just – obviously, he's a special case, but when you see a person of that age with his physical abilities and 40 to play like that, is that just genetics? Is it – because we were talking about, like, genetics earlier this week, you know, marathon runners dropped dead of heart attack, guy who smokes and eats his whole life, you know, his cholesterol's 150. I mean, a lot of it is genetics. When it comes to someone like him, is it genetics? Is it – do you buy into the green diet? How does he do this at 40, where at other people at 40, you're just like, you see the slippage and you know how old he is?
Well, let's hear from the young guy first.
Yeah, I'll give you the old guy version.
I'll give you the young guy version, the old guy version. Good, you give him the young guy version first.
It's so hard to convince any young person that what they're doing will cause them problem in the future.
Later on.
Yeah. Right. And I think, to Tom Brady's credit, I think something that he's been real smart about is you adapt. I mean, I had a skiing injury when I was younger. If I do a lunge, I hurt. Okay. People say lunges are one of the greatest exercises to do to try to exercise your lower body. I can't do it. I got to modify it.
Still to this day.
Yeah. Yeah. And that for me is going to be something permanent. But Tom Brady, you know, he's taken what the typical workout routine is, and he said, you know what, that's not working for me. I'm not 22. I'm not the heavy lineman anymore. I need to do. So he's being smart, and he's doing what he needs to keep himself moving and keep himself strong. I think, to his credit, he's doing a pretty good job there.
So, no, Mike, in the old guy version, you tell me the green tea works. You know, nothing but green.
First things first, I'd like to let Dr. Pendergren know I could fix that.
Yeah.
Okay.
We got him another client.
Just for the,
you know a good guy?
Just for the record, I could fix that problem.
All right, there we go.
You need some help. Secondly, the old guy version, you talk about his stretching program and his band workouts.
His diet, everything.
You know, there's something freakish about this guy. I tell you that.
Okay.
Off the get-go, because there's only one Tom Brady.
Right.
But secondly is the program that he's following, flexibility. That's what we lose. As we get older, we lose flexibility, and that's what leads to injuries. So his program isn't bench press, isn't squat rack. His program is stretching. His program is diet. His program is putting his body in the perfect spot to succeed. So
let me ask you then, because you do so many knees, and you've talked about this before, about 20 years ago compared to what you guys do now, whether it's an athlete, a 15-year-old or a 50-year-old guy who still wants the knee done because he wants to be the runner, how much in the last 20 years has the stretching and the bands and I'll throw, you know, the P90X workouts of, like, you know, no benches, but you're going to get all these different kind of types of bands and you're going to do it this way. How much do you, with your patients, institute that? How important is that when they start coming back from what you do to them surgically?
You know, it's funny. When you look back at playing ball, and I played some college football, and you look back and you think, we never even talked about stretching a lot. You know, we sat down in a circle, chanted a little bit.
Kind of did touch your toes.
Touched my toes, which I have no chance of doing anymore. But we touched our toes a little bit, and that was our stretch.
And you played football.
And we went and played.
Yeah.
Right? And we played pretty good. You know? Now it's awesome. I mean, these guys, we call them plyometrics and your position in space and proprioception and all these things we can do to prevent or prepare them for an abnormal running or an injury while they're playing.
Okay.
But now it seems to be the focus. It's awesome. I mean, I think we're reducing injuries with stretching programs and getting these kids ready to play. And I'll also tell you that I think some of the kids that are getting hurt are getting hurt because they're not doing that.
Because they're not stretching.
Mm-hmm. You know, they're running out in the field and they're just going, you know, 6 days a week, three hours of practice. So I think those things are super important. And since you're only 25, so tell us about the last 20 years for you, sir. Yeah.
Well, when I was crawling, it was no problem. I was very flexible.
Yeah, your bones are rubber when you're like 5 or 6 years old. It's great.
I do remember on that note, when I first heard LeBron James was participating in yoga classes, people thought he was a loon. They're like, right. Well, what's this guy doing? But you'll find, and even when you talk to personal trainers at local gyms,
they're telling
people, hit the yoga class, because you're exactly right. Our flexibility is key to having a safe joint, to having longevity. And when we're rehabbing people from injuries, we're not putting them on the squat rack. We're not putting them. We're giving them a light band. We're having them do low weight, high rep. They're trying to put the joint through a full range of motion without trying to overdo it. As you age, that becomes more and more important.
I'll tell you the key to that, my friend. Every other day at the gym after the run, Greenspan No Bits has me in yoga 3 times a week. The key is class with all the lights out, and I'm in the back. And I don't do anything correctly, but I still feel better afterwards for the stretching. I mean, there's not one position I can do correctly, or like all the people in the class, but I do think it makes a difference in terms of the stretching.
Well, that does mean that you and I can go to the class together.
There we go. And if the lights are on, I get the hell out of there. But if the lights go off, I said I'll stay.
I'm proud of you to go that far to admit that. That's big of you right now.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting into yoga within the next month. I'm getting you in a class.
Oh, yeah.
I'm taking you to church. And I'm bringing you to yoga. We're going to improve you in 2018.
Wow. Seriously, in business.
Hey, Clay, kumbaya, Clay, kumbaya.
Yeah, Michael, roll the boat to shore. I'll probably be seeing you guys in about 5 months after Eddie's regimen. Go online, CrevettiOrtho.com. You can get a chance to see online the great work that Mike Crevetti is doing. Of course, Dr. Caleb Pinneger, the Southern Nevada sports injury expert. Go online, CrevettiOrtho.com. We do appreciate all your time. I know it's busy on a Friday for you guys. Thanks for making time for us, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks after the Super Bowl.
Sounds great.
Thanks, you guys. Did either of you do a procedure today?
No procedure. No procedures today.
I always think it's fascinating when you can go in, completely repair a knee, and then come over in here and just chat with us. I think that's a great day. I'm like, I wish I could do that. Like, Clay, I'll be a little late because I'm operating, but then I'm going to come and hang out with you for like a 30 minutes and like talk about stuff.
Yeah.
I give you guys a ton of credit. I always wanted to do that. That'll never happen.
Our lives are not destined for that moment. Well, when we come back, we'll talk to a listener named Rolando who took all our money, $900 a couple of weeks ago from the weekend bankroll. We'll talk to him and find out his methods for success next on the Press Box.